Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Not to be overly dramatic or anything, but Guadalupe Mountains National Park tried to kill me.
It did not try to kill you. Come on.
Yes, it did. And after seeing my life flash before my eyes on that El Capitan trail, I have no doubt that this park wants to end me. I felt deceived, I felt attacked, and I felt used. Of all the trails I've done at Guadalupe Mountains, and I've done a bunch at this point, in fact, I think this is the park that I've done more hiking and more trails than any other park over the course of my 2 visits here, I will say that the El Capitan Trail was the least assuming. I thought it was going to be easy, honestly. It's marked as moderate in every guidebook, in every visitor guide, and even the trailhead categorizes it as moderate, since it's allegedly a mostly flat trail that goes out along the base of this giant mountain-looking rock face known as El Capitan, just like the one in Yosemite, kind of. But I'm going to need to have a serious discussion with someone about this because 5,000 feet of elevation gain.
5,000 feet.
Yeah. Several unending miles, seemingly, and hurricane-force winds are not my idea of moderate by any means.
That was a really windy day, though. I mean, the RV was getting pretty high gusts of winds throughout it, like the whole evening, I mean, and into the morning. It continued to wake us up multiple times. I'm just glad I didn't do this trail. But I'm Brad.
And I'm Matt. And we sold our loft in Chicago and gave up our city-dwelling existence to live in an RV and travel the country full-time.
Just us and our dog, Finn.
And today we're talking about Guadalupe Mountains National Park in Texas.
Thanks for listening.
Trails.
Yeah, so this trail starts by the main visitor center. There are a bunch of trailheads there. And it goes out pretty far into the desert, seemingly like it's going to be flat and pretty level, but then it starts to steadily rise and dip in elevation as it passes in and out of these little canyon pockets. And it's inching like increasingly closer to El Capitan, which initially when you're starting it, it's kind of way off in the distance. And then the miles progress and it gets closer and closer and larger, which is great and beautiful and would all be well and good if it wasn't such a miserably windy day. Today, I remember, was particularly intense. And earlier that morning, though, I had done the Permian Reef Trail, which is marked as strenuous. And that seemed like it was pretty fine to me. So I didn't really think anything of doing this. I thought it would be easy in comparison. But I guess...
Were you wrong?
I was...
Yes, you were.
Dead wrong. But being, I think the fact that it's kind of such open desert terrain with no tree cover or mountainsides to shield me or deflect the wind, I was getting pelted really hard, like head on. And it seemed like no matter what direction I was going, the wind was hitting me dead on and going against me, which was so frustrating and just sucked the energy out of me. And it reached a point where I was starting to, like, scream into the wind as loud as I could because no one else was around. The wind was so loud that it was stifling.
As I've told everyone before, I married a psycho.
Yeah.
But at least you're my psycho.
Yeah. I was definitely having a psychotic moment out there in the desert, swearing into the wind as if that would help. But don't get me wrong. Like, the views were spectacular, especially as the trail winds along the base of this gigantic rock face. This thing looms so large, jutting directly up out of the desert floor like a massive sheer cliff. The terrain is mostly dry sand and rocks, but it's all dotted with small greenery, like little cacti and shrubs, and these spiky-looking mezcal plants.
I love me some mezcal.
Same. That made things worse, because while I was out there suffering, it just made me thirsty for mezcal cocktails.
Which were hard to find.
Hard to find,
when,
yeah.
When, like, the mezcaline people were there. Like,
yeah.
The Native Americans, like, I don't get it.
Yeah, the visitor center should serve mezcal cocktails. That would really help me out. I needed a drink after this trail, let me tell you. but all beautiful, all stunning. Unfortunately, the beauty was mostly lost on me since the wind was hitting me so hard that it was basically punching the glasses right off my face and pulling tears out of my eyes. Like, I wasn't
pulling tears out of your eyes.
Like,
can you just,
like,
be more dramatic, please?
I wasn't crying. Like, but tears were, like,
pulling out of my eyes.
Flying out of my eyes, yeah.
What, is this metal in your Magneto? I don't get it.
Yeah. It was an experience. And so that's happening as the trail is getting rockier and rockier and more jagged and sharp. And I literally just kept getting knocked to the ground and against the side like a rag doll being thrashed in a storm. It was crazy. I was way out of my element.
A little rag doll.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Things got... This is not even the worst of it. The worst was when the trail reaches its pinnacle at this overlook, like, cliff edge. There are, like, sand dunes in the distance. So it's on a nice day when the wind is docile. I'm sure it's beautiful and peaceful. But it was so horrifyingly windy here at this point that I had to pretty much get into a sprint in order to even inch myself forward. It was so strong. And I was beyond exhausted at this point. As I'm, like, looping around, this trail curves back towards El Capitan, and it's getting narrower to make things worse. And I had to, like, crawl or duck down and, like, inch my way along the trail because I was too scared. If I was standing up, I was afraid I was going to get knocked into the canyon below, like, off the cliff.
I just really wish I was there, because if I was there, I feel like it would be a different story.
I
feel like
you're
over-dramatizing this. Like... Yeah.
No.
You definitely are.
It got so bad. I was just screaming and crying against my will. And it got to a point where, like, I was El Capitan personified my problems, and I would blame it for what was happening to me and the wind and feeling like I was being destroyed. And I really felt betrayed by El Capitan. I thought it was trying
betraying.
It didn't want me hiking this trail.
You're just mad that El Capitan made you its... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely put me in my place, which apparently is pretty low. But eventually, after what seemed like forever, I rounded the kind of narrow nightmare portion of the trail, and things started to calm down, like, a little bit, now that I have several cuts and wounds from being thrown against the rocks.
You really did. I'm like, prove it. And he did. Like, there was legit scraps and...
Yeah. Some of my clothes were cut. Like, I hit the rocks enough for my clothes to get torn.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So the wind kind of persisted for the rest of my hike back to the trailhead, because of course it did. But it wasn't nearly as bad as, like, this horrible, terrifying moment. And when I finally finished this, safely shut away in our rental car, my legs were jiggling like jello and my heart was pumping. And I kind of felt like my whole body had been, like, just thoroughly electrocuted or something. Yeah, but let's just, yeah, that was not moderate by any means. I'm like appalled that any guidebook or trailhead rates that as moderate. Even without the wind, that's an insane amount of, like, elevation gain and distance. It's crazy.
Yeah, normally they're pretty, like, overrating things.
Yeah.
And this one was definitely underrated.
This was, yeah, way off. Of course, El Capitan aside, Guadalupe Mountains National Park isn't all nightmarish winds and near-death experiences, fortunately. This West Texas park is mostly a paradise for hikers and rock lovers, as in geology, not like the genre of music.
Rockers can love it too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, just bring like your headphones, I guess.
Because you're trying to mute out my yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
But yeah, the thing that makes this so appealing for hikers is Guadalupe Mountains has the tallest peaks in the state of Texas. It has gypsum sand dunes. It has tons of human history. And also, most fascinatingly, the largest exposed Permian reef in the world. Yeah, so that's something to chew on. there's a lot to do and see and learn in Guadalupe Mountains. And as long as you don't foolishly venture into the park on a day when the forecast looks like a scene from the movie Twister, like I stupidly did, you'll have a great time.
Yeah, I know for us, like Guadalupe Mountains was actually like a two-parter trip since we had the RV parked at the campsite near Carlsbad Cavern, which is about 40 minutes away. But after a couple days of exploring the caves, we got to spend a lot of time in Guadalupe National Park. There's just a whole new set of activities to do, especially the hiking. The part that has a lot of great hiking trails, ranging from difficult and lengthy to easy half-mile strolls by a spring to the hardcore 11-mile trails of that vengeful El Capitan.
I can't even talk about that. I don't want to see El Capitan for the rest of my life.
I can't wait to go back now.
But, like, yeah, like you said, like, Guadalupe Mountains is so close to Carlsbad Caverns. It's a great 1-2 punch and to do both parks. And they're both so different. For as close as they are geographically, they're worlds apart. And that's phenomenal and so cool. When I first visited Guadalupe Mountains, it was by myself. I was doing a little solo, like, 3-day road trip down from Albuquerque, so we were in Albuquerque. You were selling Burton's Maplewood Farm maple syrup at the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta.
Yes, this is the time when you decided to freak out on me because we had to curb those plans to go to another event. It was stressful to plan this, but it worked out, and we became a great team because of that.
Yeah, it worked out great. I was clearly hankering for some hiking, so as long as I had access to it, I was very, very happy. And so what we decided to do was just me kind of go off on my own for a few days, rent a car, drive down to Guadalupe Mountains, which is just a few hours south of Albuquerque. We got this cute little Airbnb in Carlsbad, so drivable and close. And then I was able to do some trails here, including the park's crown jewel and one of my favorites, Guadalupe Peak, its namesake. This is the highest peak in the park and all of Texas.
That's a pretty big feat. Texas is big.
Yeah, Texas is big. And this is the biggest mountain in Texas, I guess. It's 8,749 feet tall, so it's not huge compared to, like, a lot of western mountains, especially in states like Colorado and California, but still very impressive and quite strenuous to do, especially since the trail is really steep and it's about 9 miles round trip. But even that being said, this was a piece of cake compared to El Capitan, which I'll never let go. Guadalupe Peak, the trail starts from like the same trailhead area as El Capitan, and it starts out pretty steep in the first couple miles, especially. There are some serious switchbacks that account for a majority of the elevation gain on this trail.
Switchbacks just like ruin me because
they're kind of defeating.
Yeah, because yeah. It's like I could just go straight up, like
like a mountain goat.
Yeah, like a mountain goat.
Yeah,
love
if only
mountain goats.
Yeah, so these switchbacks kind of zig and zag off the mountainside, and it's definitely rough. But the views of the valley below are amazing, and there are a bunch of points where you can see this sweeping panorama of the desert, the whole like Chihuahuan Desert out there, and a lot of it's kind of flat once you're out of the national park, so you can see for quite a ways, and it makes for a great view, and it's also kind of a motivating factor too. Like, oh, I can do this. It's great. It's beautiful. I love it. And then the trail kind of rounds into the park, around the mountain, into a tranquil forest setting, which was surprising and also a welcome reprieve and a break to get into the shade and cool off for a bit. Also get off those awful switchbacks. And then you reach a section that feels like you're almost at the top or like you're about to get to the end. And then, just kidding, no, you still have a long way to go.
And it's very deceiving. And mm-hmm. go.
Yeah, it turns out I think that area was just like, there's a backcountry campground up there. And as you're getting towards the campground, it feels like you're getting to the top. And then it psychs you out and you have to go around the mountain face again. And there's a whole other section. Which isn't too bad because it's not as steep as the initial part. So as long as you can get over the first, I would say, 2 miles, then you're mostly in the clear as long as you have, like, the stamina and time and water, of course. It's the last stretch of Guadalupe Peak that gets pretty hands-on. There's some scrambling. There's some rocky
sections.
Like
a mountain goat?
Yeah, like a mountain goat. Exactly. And well worth the effort because, like, you get to the top and there's this triangle-shaped marker signaling the highest point in Texas. And it's a very rewarding experience. You feel like, oh, I really made it. I actually did this. And it's great. I feel like I can relax now and sit down and rest my legs and have my little tuna salad lunch kit. At this point, I've eaten tuna salad in the weirdest places, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you have.
I love those things.
We're going to hear more about other trails after this short break.
Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess. The 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again. The First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Brad.
And I'm Matt, and you're listening to Parklandia. Today we're talking about Guadalupe Mountains National Park.
And we're going to go on our next trail, which is a little less insane than Matt's overdramatic story of El Capitan and some others.
No, that was completely accurate, my description.
No, it was not. Okay, maybe it was. I wasn't there. But we're going to talk about McKittrick Canyon Trail. We did this one together, and it's a much more level trail, you know, something that you can actually, like, probably run up if you wanted to. But
yeah,
I loved how it just went along the mountainside, and there's this beautiful stream in the park. We even had to tiptoe across some rocks a few times to cross the stream. The trail was really lovely and peaceful, especially when you get out of the direct sunlight into the shade of the canyon's maple trees. These ones you're not able to tap, you know, that's only grown
in
pretty much the Northeast. But if I could, I would, because that's how beautiful these trees were. Oh, I mean, they were just so full of foliage. And altogether, I guess this was only about 5 miles round trip. And it takes you to this historic Pratt Lodge named after Walter Pratt, who was a geologist with the Heart of Gold.
Yes, with an angel.
Yes, we owe a lot to Mr. Pratt. He and his family owned about 6,000 acres of land here in the canyon, and because they loved it so much as a separate destination, they even built a cabin there, which you are able to go and see to this day. You can't go inside of it, but it is a beautiful place for a nice shaded picnic.
Yeah, great spot for tuna salad. My favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
Every spot is a good spot.
You're just obsessed. Again, you're obsessive.
Yeah, what can I say?
I love that about you.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this guy, Walter Pratt, he eventually donated this private land to the government, allowing it to form Guadalupe Mountains National Park. And today, McKitcher Canyon is one of the most popular destinations here.
Thanks, Walter.
I know, seriously. But this guy, he wasn't the first person to discover the mountains by any means.
No, definitely not. I mean, there's evidence of humans that lived here for over 10,000 years. There were definitely ancient hunter-gatherers who left behind things like rock art and pottery creations. The area's main occupation was by the Mezclero Apache people. They eventually ended up retreating into the mountains because of the settlers who were expanding. Sadly, we've all learned that this kind of invasion before has happened over and over and over again. And after a series of conflicts between the Apache and the soldiers, most Native Americans were forced onto reservations.
Yeah, really awful. Settlers attempted to ranch here too at some point, but the terrain is just too rugged and difficult and unforgiving. One thing that they did manage to accomplish was build a structure called Frijole Ranch. They did this in 1876. It's served as a residence and eventually as a community center and even a post office. Today, though, it's just a small museum with ranching history, and it serves as the entry point to a couple of the park's easiest trails, which go to Smith Spring and Manzanita Spring. Both are lovely.
Yeah, I'd actually love to talk some more about the diverse terrain and trails opportunities here. There was the Salt Basin Dunes.
Yeah, I know. This is definitely a part of the park that is very unvisited, undiscovered, probably because it's really out on its own, and it takes a while to get there. But it's totally worth the drive. This place looks like a whole other planet entirely. It looks more like Death Valley, honestly, than Guadalupe Mountains.
Yeah, you have to really drive a long way to get there, though. I mean, you have to drive outside the park and then around the southern edge and then back into the park from the west side. And then there's this, like, super long dirt road with, you know, occasional homes and trailers and little farms with goats that look like demons from that movie, you know, The Witch.
Yeah, I know. I remember seeing, like, scary-looking goats that I assume were possessed by Satan. But anyway, it's good to keep driving. Just keep on driving.
Yes.
This section is so far out of the way. And we were the only ones there. We're the only car in the little parking lot, which was good. It was great. And it was fun to do that and have it all to ourselves, really. It was a scorching hot day. The sun was blazing. We had to spray a whole bunch of sunscreen, bring water, and then take the trail into the dunes.
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't much of a trail, really. It was like 3/4 mile through the desert until you reach the sand, which is bright white color, you know, super smooth and fine. It kind of felt like sugar. Mm. But these dunes aren't really as massive as the ones in like the Great Sand Dunes, you know. But they're shimmering and especially beautiful with the mountain backdrop there. It's just a little different than what I expected.
But yeah, very.
It's still diverse, and you can definitely see there's a lot of wildlife and creatures
there. Yeah, the views were extraordinary and very unique compared to anything else in the park. So that was fun. And we got to see jackrabbits.
And then the Roadrunners.
Oh my gosh, very exciting. Yeah. Some serious cartoon-like wildlife out there in the sand dunes.
History.
We should talk about the highest peak in Texas some more, because there's a lot of human history here. It's fascinating to mention the fact that most of the park is actually a gigantic fossilized reef.
Yeah, it's actually the largest what's called a Permian reef in the world. It's like the biggest on Earth, actually. It's kind of hard to imagine that what's now a desert environment being a tropical reef millions and millions of years ago. But this part of Texas used to be part of a shallow sea, and the heart of it was this enormous reef filled with shells and sponges and all that coral goodness. Mm-hmm. But now that the world's changed and continents have moved around and things have dried up, all of this ancient reef is now exposed in this desert climate.
Yeah, and a lot of trails you can see how the rock walls look dried up with the coral reef, and how some of the rocks you're stepping on are actually crushed remnants of the same reef.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And it's especially noticeable on trails like the Permian Reef, which I mentioned earlier. You can also pick up an audio guide from the Visitor Center for free. And as you're walking along the trail, it'll point out specific things on the route, telling you more about what the environment was like way back when it was underwater, and highlighting the different reef portions, which to the untrained eye, or if you're just kind of glancing over it, you would not necessarily know it. Or you would think it's just a rock face.
Yeah, it's definitely good to like look at all those before going on your hikes.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you can also, another opportunity, you can get a real good reefy vibe at the grotto section at the end of the McKittrick Canyon Trail. It's an additional couple miles past the Pratt Lodge where we were, but I would say you should definitely do it, especially if you want to immerse yourself more in this like reef environment, this reef setting.
Well worth the extra effort.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's not that hard either. It's flat and a lot of it's shaded. And the grotto, this section, it gets its name not only from just how many of these lush, shady trees there are, but also this cave-like reef wall that covers a lot of it. It's really tranquil, really unique, and it has these pillar-like reef structures that dangle from the roof like stalactites. They're huge. They're kind of spiky and a little sharp, so don't, like, slam yourself against it, I guess, but why would you do that? And, yeah, the grotto is a really lovely place to, like, sit down, relax, and have a nice little picnic with my favorite food, tuna salad.
You really like tuna salad. But before we go to my favorite segment of the day, we are going to take a quick break.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess. The 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again. The First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Brad.
And I'm Matt. You're listening to Parklandia.
It's that time again where we get to do one of our favorite segments of the podcast.
My favorite.
Matt, what was your favorite thing to do at Guadalupe Mountains National Park in West Texas?
Well, you could probably guess what my least favorite part was, and that's the
El Capitan.
Yeah, that's for sure. Not my favorite.
No.
I would say, though, my favorite was the time that I summited Guadalupe Peak on my first time here. It was super strenuous. Well, it was strenuous, tiresome, but I also just felt such a sense of accomplishment doing that trail. This was, at the time, one of the hardest and longest trails I had done. This was when I was really getting into more hardcore hiking and pushing myself and challenging myself. And I just felt really accomplished and really strong when I was able to finish that.
Yeah.
And also the views were just fantastic. And it was neat to be able to say that I've been to the top of Texas. So thoroughly loved that.
That is actually a really cool feat to have. I mean,
yeah.
Mine, though, was probably definitely. Okay,
probably
we'll go with
definitely.
That. Probably definitely Pratt Lodge. I just loved it. I mean, you could just sit under those trees as they're like swishing back and forth. Mm. And if I had my hammock, I would literally have been in heaven.
Yeah.
And I guess that would be my first thing is a hammock and a full picnic lunch for Pratt Lodge. You know, I think that this was great. And here we go with the reoccurring thing of water because it's just Texas. It's dry and there's a lot of sun. There's not a lot of shade. So you definitely need water. And then I would definitely bring sunglasses because there's a reflection from the water as you're walking through and then the sun, of course.
Yeah, right. That's important. For me, I think the three things I would bring would be a windbreaker, probably. I mean, considering what I endured, I think that would make sense. Preferably a windbreaker that could also shield me when I'm being heaved against jagged rock would be ideal and really helpful. I would also bring...
Drama queen.
Yeah. No. Spot on. I would also bring prescription sunglasses. It gets super bright, and I needed to use... I have transitional lenses, so I have... There are these gigantic, obnoxious-sized glasses that will darken and tint when it's in the sun, so...
This is so much fun.
They're really protective and good, and I wore them a lot when I was in Guadalupe Mountains because you're in the desert, and everything's so exposed, and it's not very often that you have a sufficient tree cover. And then the third thing I would bring, which you can probably guess, is my favorite lunch item, and for some reason I ate this everywhere in Guadalupe Mountains, is my favorite little tuna salad lunch packets. I've eaten them all over at this point in this park. I've eaten them in the grotto, Guadalupe Peak, and...
I'm never allowing you to buy tuna again.
It's just...
Too much tuna.
Yeah, and also, speaking of snacky things that I love, I wanted to give a special shout-out to Taos Mountain Bars, which we discovered at the Pine Springs Visitor Center here at Guadalupe Mountains. So good. Such a great surprise.
So great. I mean, they are literally the best.
Yeah, because the park doesn't have any restaurants or cafe or anything. And we were in there to, like, pick up probably a visitor guide, look for, like, items to buy, souvenirs. And the visitor center had this little cooler stocked with these amazing locally made energy bars made just over the New Mexico border. And it's a small company. They use high quality ingredients to make these delicious bars. And the one I had was almond agave, I think. And it was a game changer for me. As someone who eats a lot of energy bars and granola bars and stuff, I feel pretty much ruined on other energy bars. Nothing can live up to it. And ever since then, I've been like stocking up on them at REI stores because they're so few and far between.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we need to wrap this up with our dream vacation and what it would be.
Yeah, well, honestly, I'd be happy to just come here and emerge without being bruised and bloody. That sounds like a dream to me. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. Drama queen. But really, though, I mean, I think it'd be amazing to come here in the fall to see all the foliage.
Oh, I know. Seriously. So bright, so vivid. I think when most people think of foliage, they think of, like, New England settings, which is great. But there are actually really stunning maple trees in colors here, especially all along like McKittrick Canyon area, and especially in October when things really, really, really brighten.
Yeah, and the temperature is definitely more comfortable at that time of the year as well.
Yeah, totally. And I think it would also be really fun to stay inside the park with our RV. There are a bunch of RV sites at the Pine Springs area by the visitor center. And surprisingly, this area had good Wi-Fi service. I remember like sitting in the parking lot and being like, oh, I can actually access internet. So we could do this.
Yeah, that's actually not, that's great. Because that's a big struggle that we have is the internet service.
Right. I know, big struggle. And probably one of the reasons that we didn't even consider camping here because we assumed it would be not possible. But good to know for the future. And also conveniently close to a variety of trailheads.
And Taos Mountain bars.
Yes, of course, of course. So in addition to those things, those aspects, I think it would also be fun to camp here because we could stargaze at night. It's perfect for that. We're far, far removed from any city lights, so we could just gawk at the leaves by day, and then by night, just stare at the stars. And how lovely does that sound?
It sounds really lovely.
Yeah. You've been listening to the Parklandia Podcast, a show about national parks by iHeartRadio.
Created by Matt Kerouac, Brad Kerouac, and Christopher Hasiotis.
Produced and edited by Mike Johns.
Executive produced by Christopher Hasiotis.
Special thanks to Gabrielle Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the Parklandia crew.
And hey, listeners, if you're enjoying the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people like you find our show.
You can keep up with us on social media. Check out photos from our travels on Instagram at ParklandiaPod. And join in the conversation in our Facebook group, Parklandia Rangers.
Thank you so much for listening.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.